Star Walker Studios presents Star Citizens United, a podcast dedicated to making the most of the future hit PC video game, Star Citizen. Greetings, citizen, and welcome to the Star Citizens United podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. Today, I'll talk about corporations in Star Citizen. Hello, listener. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to episode 6 of Star Citizens United. I'm so glad that you joined me today. I'm very excited to be back on the mic talking about Star Citizen, talking about the lore of the game, and yeah, it's exciting stuff. So as promised last week, this week I'm talking about corporations in Star Citizen, and this comes from part 4 of the writer's guides on the Robert Space Industries website, and I will have a link directly to this article in the show notes for this episode at starwalkerstudios.com. There's a lot of information in this, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get through it in 30 minutes, so we're just going to dive right in here. The UEE is a fiercely capitalist society. As the UEE enters a period of economic strain, while some corporations are beginning to wilt, the more powerful and unscrupulous ones are beginning to push the boundaries. They're finding that while everyone's suffering, the money they've managed to accrue is buying them new opportunities with officials who are willing to take a payout to look the other way. Wow, that sounds so familiar. All right, so next we go into corporate organization. Larger corporations will usually have several hub offices scattered around the universe. I think we mean galaxy. Each one is responsible for a sector. These sectors vary in size depending on the size of the corporation. Due to the lag in communications, most corporations have found it more efficient to have senior executives placed strategically around UEE space to react more quickly to any problems or situations that may arise. And you know what? I'm just going to take a moment to go on a little tangent here. I notice this a lot in the Star Citizen stuff. They always talk about the universe when they really mean galaxy. As far as I know, the Star Citizen, you know, the UEE is not intergalactic. It's limited to one galaxy. And even if it was intergalactic, it would, what, be a couple galaxy, a handful of galaxies? And there are billions of galaxies. I don't know if this is just kind of, I don't want to say sloppiness, but just, you know, people at CIG saying universe when they mean galaxy just because, I don't know, it's just a slip of the tongue or they're not really thinking about it. Or if this is a calculated thing to show us that human centrism and narcissism is still alive and well in the age of Star Citizen, where, you know, we consider ourselves to be the center of the universe and the only thing worth noting in the universe. But it just bothers me every time I see them use the word universe, because the universe is a ridiculously big place and our galaxy is insignificant in the total scheme. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that the entire galaxy is not colonized. They haven't explored every star system. They haven't, you know, found every Earth-like planet or whatever. So even to say that it's, you know, the whole galaxy is a bit of an inaccuracy and kind of arrogant. And then to take that beyond to the whole universe, it really bothers me. So I'm not sure if maybe the people that write this really don't understand the difference between a galaxy and a universe, or if they're, you know, trying to say that humans are that arrogant still or what. But it bothers me every time I see it. Anyway, back to the topic. The corporate headquarters can be located in almost any system. Many base themselves on Earth or Terra for the prestige associated with it. A handful of ship and weapons manufacturers with military contracts base themselves on MacArthur in the Killian system to be closer to the military shipyards. The Stanton system was sold to generate money for the Synth world. The four primary owners of the planets are Microtech, Hurston Dynamics, ArcCorp, and Crusader Industries. While Stanton's planets now serve as their primary production centers, hundreds of smaller corporations have rented out space on the planets for their own headquarters. So I'm thinking this is going to be an important place in the game, the Stanton system, since they're kind of talking so much about it, but we'll have to see. Interculture trading. Do we trade with the Banu, the Xi'an? Yes. So let's talk about trade with the Xi'an. The UEE Department of Trade closely monitors the import and export of goods between the UEE and the Xi'an. Human companies that wish to trade raw materials and goods must obtain an import or export license from the government. During the licensing process, the Empire will analyze the company's trading history, run backgrounds on executives, and charge handsomely for the opportunity. In short, the UEE is attempting to discern whether the company's trading will benefit the Empire. The general mood of the UEE is that healthy trade is a sign of political goodwill. However, elements in the Empire are terrified of becoming too reliant on outside goods. Again, sounds familiar. So they will strategically approve or veto trade agreements. Trading corporations, both human and Xi'an, find this endlessly frustrating, as it appears to them that agreements are approved or denied for strictly arbitrary reasons. How does this affect the common trader? This could be relevant to some of us in Star Citizen. Well, technically, a UEE trader, citizen or civilian, needs to license to trade with the Xi'an, but generally, it boils down to a question of volume. If you're a trader with a freelancer full of goods, they probably aren't going to really care. If you've got a fleet of caterpillars, then they probably will. So that's pretty cool. So, you know, already this is kind of set up for you in the game. If you want to get into trading, and you're going to presumably start out small unless you've dumped a lot of money into the crowdfunding and you have a huge ship or fleet of ships to trade with. But let's say you start small and, you know, you work up to a freelancer, you know, even at that point, which freelancer is probably going to be pretty expensive, you know, if you have to earn it in game. And so at that point, you're probably already pretty profitable if you're scaling up to a freelancer. But still, you don't have to worry about these licenses at that point. So by the time you get big enough, the UEE government is going to notice you and be like, hey, you need to buy a license. Hopefully you'll be able to afford it. All right. So trade with the Banu. Being a trading culture, the Banu made sure there were nearly intractable provisions for trading from the very beginning. Let's just say the Interstellar Peace and Trade Accord of 2348 was not its original title. Okay, so what was its original title? Don't leave us hanging, guys. Come on. Therefore, there is a vast and free trading market between our two cultures that has permeated through the centuries. I'm not sure if permeated is the word we really want there. But anyway, the UEE has tried to temper the flow of goods in and out of the Banu Protectorate, but with little progress. And there are two main reasons why. Number one is their organization. The Banu Protectorate is a collection of independent planets, so it's difficult to negotiate sweeping trade protocols with them. In fact, there are three separate proposals that have been submitted over the past 10 years that are still waiting to be reviewed at the next gathering. Sorry about this. This needs a little editing, so I'm trying to do it on the fly so that it really makes sense to you, but sometimes it takes me a second to figure out what they're trying to say. The second reason is their location. While there is a cluster of Banu systems on one side of the UEE, they also have claimed isolated systems that are scattered throughout the universe. For instance, one in Vondul space, one in Xi'an, and those are ones that we know of. So presumably there's others that we don't know about. And the UEE still isn't sure how they got there. All right, so that's kind of the overview of trading and corporations in Star Citizen. And what we go into next here is a list of companies. At first, I was going to skip this because I was like, oh, this is going to be really dry and boring. But a lot of these are companies we hear a lot about, like Robert Space Industries, Origin Jumpworks, and stuff like that. And I know for me, you know, I watch almost everything that Robert Space Industries or or CIG puts out on their YouTube channel. I watch, what is it, Around the Verse. I used to watch Wingman's Hangar. I was a huge fan of The Next Great Starship. I really hope they do another one of those. It's the only, like, quote-unquote reality show I've ever liked. It was like, reality TV for nerds. It was awesome. I don't usually watch 10 for the Chairman or 10 for the Devs or whatever, but I watched the other stuff, and I really love their commercials that they make for the different ships. And so, you know, when you watch this stuff, you know, you see these company names thrown around. You see the names of Origin Jump Works and Robert Space Industries and Anvil Aerospace, these companies that produce starships. But now you're starting to also see companies that produce weapons and components for starships, which is awesome, but it can be a little overwhelming because you don't really know who these guys are. So I thought this might be fun to go through. So first, of course, we have Robert Space Industries, or RSI. And I apologize if I sometimes use RSI when I should be using CIG. I'm still a little fuzzy on what's what. I think RSI is the in-game company and Cloud Imperium Games is the actual game company. But it's confusing because the website is robertspaceindustries.com. And in the beginning, like of the Kickstarter and everything, I don't remember ever hearing about CIG. Everything was Robert Space Industries. So I could be totally out of my tree here, but it seems like to me that it started out RSI and then they decided to call their company CIG or whatever. So I'm still a little fuzzy on what's what. So for those of you that do understand what the hell's going on, I apologize if sometimes I use things incorrectly. So anyway, Robert Space Industries in game is the company that was the original creator of the engine that kickstarted humanity's expansion into space. I like that they use kickstarted there. I wonder if it was crowdfunded. Robert Space Industries builds a wide range of spaceships that serve all needs, from basic interstellar travel to deep exploration on the outer edges of the galaxy. Their tagline is Robert Space Industries delivering the stars since 2075. So that's pretty cool. That's RSI for you. Origin Jump Works. What? Some of these have letters. Like this has GMBH after it. I'm not sure if that's like their stock code or what. I don't know what that means. But anyway, Origin Jump Works, which I'm a fan of. I have my 325A is my ship that I have in the game from Origin Jump Works. The BMW of the Star Citizen universe. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Their craft are more expensive, sleeker looking status symbols. Maybe more so than they're worth. So what is the motorcycle in Star Citizen? If Origin Jump Work ships are kind of the sports cars, what's the motorcycle? Origin ships are customized for the client and can be expensive to maintain and repair. Oh, great. Now they tell me. They get numbers instead of names. For example, the Origin 300i, the Origin 890 Jump, the Origin M50 Turbo, etc. So awesome. I love Origin Jump Works. And one thing I love about the game so far, just in Arena Commander, is how the AI or the computer voice, whatever you want to call it, of the different companies are different. So if you have a... Oh, fuck. What's it called? The game, the Hornet. If you have a Hornet, which is Anvil Aerospace, I believe, you know, when you start Arena Commander and all your systems come online, you know, the voice is a different voice than like my 325A by Origin. And like Origin has this kind of sexy female voice. And I think that's awesome. I love that immersion and that attention to detail in Star Citizen. And that's one of the things I really love about the game. And I like that these different companies kind of have their own personality. They have their own, you know, voice actor or whatever doing the voice for their computer systems and stuff. That's really cool. I think what would be awesome in the game is kind of like in the real world where you can get different voices for your GPS. If you could get different voices for your ship. So say you have a Hornet and you don't like the standard Anvil Aerospace voice. If you could in-game buy a different voice for your ship. And I think what would even be cooler is if all the companies didn't do that, right? So like Anvil, it might not make sense for them. I'm assuming that they do more, and I guess we'll find out here in a minute, but I'm assuming they do more kind of like military, you know, attack craft and stuff like that. But like a company like Origin, where they're all about, you know, looking sexy and sleek design and being a status symbol, I could totally see them having all kinds of different voices that you can buy for probably way too much money for your ship. So that would be really cool. All right, so now we have Musashi Industrial and Starflight Concern. Wow. That is a mouthful. Their abbreviation is MISC, or MISC, however you want to say it. It looks like the abbreviation for miscellaneous, M-I-S-C. So I think maybe these are like kind of like stock symbols, but they don't all have them and they're not standardized. So I don't know. I like the idea of them having like a stock symbol for each of the companies, like for the stock exchange. That's really cool. So if they're kicking around that idea, I vote that they do that. That would be awesome. But if you're going to do that, you got to standardize it, right? All right. So Musashi Industrial and Starflight Concern, who I predict will not ultimately be a very successful company unless they change their name to something more, I was going to say rememberable, more memorable. They are mass producers of very efficient modular ships, mostly armored freighters of different sizes that make them the preferred brand for traders and larger corporations. Over 30 years ago, MISC signed a lend-lease agreement to establish a tech trade with Xi'an Engineers. Now that's interesting. That's pretty cool. Next, we have Drake Interplanetary. I've seen a commercial for them. Kind of a fun game for me when I go over these is try to remember what ship they do. I'm sure there are people in the community that know way more about the ships than I do. But just from watching the commercials, I'm trying to remember who did Drake. Did they do the Freelancer? I don't know. Maybe I'll find out. Ostensibly a legitimate company, it's an open secret that they manufacture cheap, well-armed craft favored by pirates. Oh, to the point that they're named in that vein: Cutlass, Buccaneer, Privateer, Marauder, etc. That's awesome. Drake ships tend to have a piecemeal look to them that makes each distinct, but also means that they are inconsistently built. One of Drake's main subsidiaries is their salvage depots, located conveniently around UEE and Banu space, offering top dollar for spare parts. So I have a feeling that we all are going to be frequenting the Drake salvage depots to drop off things that we find in salvage and to maybe get parts for our ships when they're damaged. Next, we have Anvil Aerospace. For civilians, Anvil Aerospace produces small fighting craft, but with less of the pirate stigma. Okay, so I was kind of right about them. These ships are more expensive, less spit and glue, and built to take more hits than a comparable Drake model. The bulk of Anvil's income is from its military contracts with the UEE to design and build their warships, especially the iconic Hornet. Awesome. And by the way, guys, you know, I am not a Star Citizen expert by any stretch. I am learning here right along with you. So you may hear me say things that are blatantly wrong, especially when I'm giving my own little commentary. So feel free to correct me or, you know, educate me. But hopefully, you know, you can be nice and constructive about it. But I do not claim to be an expert. I am not on the mic because I think I know everything about Star Citizen. I don't at all. Part of the reason for this podcast is because I wanted to learn more about Star Citizen. I wanted to learn more about the lore, about the game. And I thought, why not, while I'm doing that, why not share what I learned with you? So I am not an expert. I'm not claiming to be. So yeah, feel free to help me out if you hear me being confused about something and you know more about what's going on, because I'm here to learn. Next, we have Aegis Dynamics. Aegis grew to prominence as a manufacturer of military spacecraft during the First T'Varan War. Favored by Ivar Messer, their orbital bombers grew to public prominence after his infamous victory on Idris IV. When he ascended to become First Imperator, Messer contracted Aegis as the UEE's primary source of military-grade spacecraft and defenses. During the Messer era, Aegis Craft became synonymous with the ruthless, oppressive regime. After the fall of the Imperador, most of Aegis' military contracts were stripped, their ships fell out of favor with the public, and the company went into a tailspin. They downsized their craft production and turned to manufacturing parts. These days, Aegis only produces a few craft. The old Retaliator bombers have been repurposed for widespread use as deep space transport or hauling vessels. The Idris frigate, named after the Battle of Idris IV, has been demilitarized for private ownership, even though entrepreneurial pirate packs have been known to spring for one. That's pretty cool. All right, so those are the producers of starships in the game. And next, we get into the producers of ship parts. So there are a lot of these. So these are ship parts suppliers, engine, computers, and thrusters. We've got Aegis Dynamics, the manufacturing department of Aegis, now their most profitable division, still produces quality, dependable engines and propulsion systems for contracted ship manufacturers. And they make power plants and thrusters of standard to quality grade. Tyler Design / Tech, I'm not sure how I'm supposed to read that, is an astronautic firm that exclusively designs power plants. They have a generic line of off-the-shelf power plants, but they're also contracted for exclusive plant designs, such as their successful bid to build the Constellation power plant. Wow, this part especially needs editing. So they manufacture power plants of quality grade. We have Wilkes and Fetterman, which is a propulsion company. They've been around for over 100 years. They were formed by a pair of engineers who were building engines and thrusters for land-based vehicles and hovercraft. As their success grew, they slowly expanded their operations to ship parts. A dependable and... Wow, I wish they'd write in complete sentences. So their ship parts are a dependable and affordable option. Unfortunately, they aren't the most reliable. Their low cost comes with the savings of getting cheaper parts. People say when they work, they're great. So they manufacture thrusters, main and maneuvering thrusters of a standard grade. Now we have Wilsop. Their primary product is their P3 auto compensator targeting software. But they also have products to cover the whole spectrum of electronic analysis, from tracking and targeting to scanners and deep space radar. So they manufacture avionics and ship systems like CPUs, and they have a standard to quality grade. Chimera Communications is a dedicated communications and scan system builder. They are the rugged go-to company for miners and explorers alike. They tend to be pricier, but their products are sturdy, well-tested, and dependable. And Chimera Communications tries to keep a blue-collar tone to their ads and company. So they manufacture radar and communications devices, avionics, and system scanners, variable types and focuses. And also ship systems like the CPU. And their grade is standard to quality. So next we have manufacturers of defensive systems for ships. So these are armor and shields. We have Basilisk. Basilisk is a manufacturer of body armor and ship plating. Basilisk is a manufacturer of body armor and ship plating. They have massive yearly profits from military contracts, but the armor that they make and provide to the military is cheap and weak. It says they break out the good stuff for high-end private sector sales. It's often joked among naval rank and file that if you're going to strap Basilisk armor to your ship, make sure you order it from their public site. So again, they manufacture armor and shield generators, and the grade is cheap for military craft to quality for private buyers. So that's interesting that they're giving better components to private buyers than the military. That's interesting. Next, we have Talisman, which is a private defense company that deals exclusively in armor plating. They are a solid middle-of-the-road company that does offer some high-end armor options. So again, they manufacture armor and shield generators, and the grade is standard to quality based on cost. Next, we have some weapons manufacturers for guns and missiles. We have Behring is a Terra-based weapons consortium. It outsources to a lot of designers and subsidiaries to be a one-stop shop for all your defensive needs. Now, that sounds like a tagline. Think of it as a conglomerate of Springfield Arms and General Dynamics. They make guns, missiles, tanks, dropships, sentry drones, etc., mostly for the UEE, but there are also civilian models. They usually favor quantity of production over quality. Some of their popular models are the P4AR, which is a standard issue rifle for the UEE military, and it's about as basic and recognizable as the modern M16. Also available as the P4SC, a more compact and collapsible carbine version. So Behring manufactures personal weapons, small arms, and mobile heavy weaponry, armored units, tanks, dropships, personnel carriers, space armament, kinetic weapons, energy weapons, and missile turrets, ship armor, and shield systems. And their grade is standard to premium. Next, we have Klaus and Werner, or Klaus and Werner is probably how it's pronounced. Some government contracts, but mostly personal defense company. Okay, I'll just go with that. Obviously, this is not the final draft. Some of their popular models are the Model 2 Arclight, which is a handheld laser made famous as Kyle Fenris' sidearm on the hit vid show The Frontier. Okay. Just some random fluff there. They manufacture spacecraft armament, kinetic and energy weapons and turrets, armor, and miscellaneous gear with a grade of standard to quality. Associated Sciences and Development. They are a high-end ship weapons company. Usually their stuff is very expensive and exclusive. Mostly they make energy weapons, but also some specialty classes, such as distortion cannons, railguns, shredders, and things like that. Some of their popular models, they gained notoriety with the unveiling of their EE6 Electron cannon. Its blast polarizes electrical charges on an atomic level, causing all sorts of destruction as well as ugly, gruesome deaths. Consequently, they have a somewhat tarnished reputation with the public. So they manufacture spacecraft weapons, kinetic energy weapons, missiles, and turrets. And their grade is standard to excellent. Next, we have Talon Weapon Systems. This is a Croshaw-based munitions manufacturer focusing mostly on missiles and bombs. If it exists, there's a Talon that can blow it up. Nice. So they make missiles of standard grade. Joker Engineering is a small startup company founded by an eccentric engineering whiz kid named Barlow Elias. They burst onto the scene by creating specialty weapons. His weapons are generally favored by criminals and pirates because of their unusual applications, such as the beacon bomb designed to simulate a distress beacon with customizable distress calls. So kind of like the crybaby from Firefly, right? So Joker Engineering manufactures specialty weapons, also defensive or criminal countermeasures, and deception technology with a grade of cheap to standard. All right, I think this is Rusimov Rehabilitation Systems. Rusimov Rehabilitation Systems is an Earth-based corporation that provides rehabilitation services throughout the UEE. Their arms division is responsible for a groundbreaking series of new weaponry designed to incapacitate opponents without taking lives. Piracy is a real risk in some areas of space, but the good men and women at Rusimov Rehabilitation Systems believe that death is not the ultimate deterrent to criminal behavior. Instead, a solid combination of financial consequences and structured rehabilitation is the key to getting offenders to straighten up and fly right. That is why we offer a line of hangar-level, shipboard, and personal, less-than-lethal defense options that provide customers with the safety that they need and criminals the second chance that they deserve. The Silent Sentinel, less lethal boarding defense system, provides multiple forms of short-term defense that can disable even the largest boarding party, leaving you to collect the insurance payout or available bounties, and the authorities to do what they do best. The personal stunner provides the necessary leverage for those who want to keep a bad situation in hand. If safety and civility are your objectives, visit your local RRS vendor today. So their tagline is RSS, security with humanity. And they manufacture anti-intrusion devices and armor of a grade standard quality. So now we have some other companies. We've got Kelto Con Stores, which are our future convenience stores, like 7-Eleven or Circle K. They're found in virtually every hauling station, orbital platform, and city. They are famous for their Hydro Froze frozen drink. I love this stuff. This is so great. Their tagline is, "It's a long road out there. We make it a little shorter." Oh, isn't that nice? And they appeared in Tales of Kid Crimson, Hydro Froze, and Clean Shot Sponsor. Okay. We have Shubin Interstellar, which is a massive conglomerate that started out as a terraforming outfit, then expanded into planetary mining. They've even started releasing a line of mining equipment. Toriel Foodstuffs, producer of vacuum-sealed vitamin-rich foodstuffs, usually bought in bulk for extended space trips. And their tagline is "For the Distance." Covalex is a shipping company. They own several orbital platforms that act as transfer hubs and hauler slash commercial transport stops. We have Arc Corp, builds fusion engines for industrial craft, also has divisions for terraforming and mining, owns one of the planets in the Stanton system. Microtech produces electronics, including handheld sensors and computer software upgrades for starships, owns one of the planets in the Stanton system. Hurston Dynamics is a family-owned company that is a serious weapons provider for the civilian ship market. Ah, a family-owned weapons provider. How nice. They own one of the planets in the Stanton system. Crusader Industries constructs and operates commercial transports for lower to middle income families, has defense contracts with the government to make military thrusters, owns one of the planets in the Stanton system. I don't know why I found that funny, but I did. All right, so that's it. So there is a lot here. This is a whole bucket full of awesome, as I like to say. I love the just the level of detail that they're putting into the, I almost said universe, to the galaxy. And you know, even going down to, you know, the new 7-Eleven, that's just great stuff. So definitely head on over to Starwalker Studios, where you can find a link to this article. I did skip a few of the things, but I gave you most of it, but definitely go check it out. All right, well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Star Citizens United. Sorry that I went a little long today, but I wanted to get through that. If you would like to reach me, you can email me at scupodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me on Google+. Just search for Lex Starwalker. And you can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Please visit our website, starwalkerstudios.com, where you can find the show notes for this and all our episodes, as well as our other amazing podcasts. If you like Star Citizens United and you'd like to help us out and help us reach more listeners and more Star Citizens fans, then a great way that you can do so is if you use iTunes, head on over to the iStore and please give us a rating and or a review. I would really, really appreciate it. And if you give us a 5-star rating, I will mention you on the show and thank you heartily and profusely. So once again, I thank you very much for downloading and listening to Star Citizens United. I hope you have a great week, and I will see you out there. This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts. Please see all that Starwalker Studios has to offer at starwalkerstudios.com.